What's going on, people? Welcome to Pain Points, proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Tainus Hoopers family. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. You can find me on Twitter over at Jake Painting. Today, I'm here with Jack Borman, Tainus Hoopers contributor, friend of the podcast. What's going on, Jack?
Not much, man. Just counting down the days until Timberwolves basketball is back, and just excited for training camp to get going tomorrow, which is Sunday, as we're recording this on Saturday. So how are things down under?
Yeah, pretty good down here. Same thing, really, just waiting for basketball to be back. We're slowly crawling towards the finish line of this long marathon. But yeah, almost there now. Training camp, we've had a few media availabilities over the last few days. You did Russell and I did Towns, so it's good to be, you know, getting some access, and the players are back in Minnesota and camp's about to start, the team section of training camp. So everything's ramping back up. Today we're going to talk about lineups. It's been kind of the talking point, I guess, around Timberwolves world at the moment. There's a lot of different lineup combinations and players who deserve minutes who might not get as many as we think or might get more than we think. So we're going to have some fun with it today. We're going to go through our starters, our closing lineups, and then just some weird, funky lineups that we want to see get minutes as well. So let's get straight into it, Jack. We're going to go with who we want to start, not who we think will start. I think we both think that the actual stars will probably be D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, Josh Okogie, Juancho Hernangómez, and Karl Anthony Towns. That's obviously not set in stone, but that's who we think it's going to be. We're going to go with who we want to see starting. So Jack, let me get your starters first, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, so who I kind of want to start is I want to see, you know, Russell start at the one, obviously, because I think we both agree that Rubio is not going to start, that Rubio is going to kind of come off the bench. We've heard Ryan Saunders talk about and Gerson Rosas talk about kind of the Houston philosophy that they had with you know, the whole James Harden and Chris Paul backcourt with being able to have, you know, a really solid playmaker out on the floor for 48 minutes. So I think Rubio is going to come off the bench. So I'll have Russell at the one, and then Beasley at the two. And then I want Okogie to start at the three, or even to start at the four and have Edwards start at the three. Just because I'm not a big Juancho guy, but because I think that they're absolutely going to go with Juancho, I'll leave Juancho in there at the four, and then have Cat at the five. I just think that, you know, if you have Edwards out there right away, he would probably have to guard the best opposing wing or perimeter player. And I just think that would be really tough for him to do, I think, kind of right away. And so with having Josh out there, I think that, you know, Josh can kind of check whoever, you know, the best scorer or perimeter player is for the other team. And then, you know, have Anthony come in right away and, you know, after 4 or 5 minutes, whatever it is, for Juancho, and slide Okogie up to the four. So those are who I want for my starters. Obviously, you know, I don't think that's necessarily how it's going to happen, because I do think they end up starting Edwards, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of the opposite. I think that I just want to lean into the offense straight away. Like, I want to go Russell, Beasley, Edwards, Layman as the four, if I was choosing for myself, just because I think that he adds a little bit more defensive versatility, and then Towns obviously at the five. So yeah, I want to lean into the offense. I want to come out the gates and just punch the opposition in the face with offense. Like, that lineup has so much shooting, cutting, athleticism that there's no way in my mind that Russell, Beasley, Edwards, Layman, Towns five-man unit doesn't score pretty heavily. I posted this on Twitter yesterday, but I'll say it here again. 12 teams have missed the playoffs who were top 10 in offensive rating in the last 10 years, which is just over one a year. So that's kind of not rare necessarily, but only two teams have missed the playoffs while being a top five offense in the last 10 years. And as much as this team needs to compete defensively, I think that's a given. I think they need to wield their weapons, which means I think they just need to try and drag teams into a gunfight and win that gunfight with their offensive firepower. And I think this lineup kind of puts the rifle forward on that front right out of the gate. Like, and then I think you adjust, like you said, with Edwards coming on for Okoji. I think I'm kind of the opposite there, where I think you just adjust accordingly for defense. If Edwards and Beasley are having an especially bad night on that end, you hook them for Okoji, you hook them for Culver. You know, if Lehman's not providing the shooting you need in the five-out offense with Towns, then you get Hernan Gomez in, and then, you know, you can get Russell out for Rubio, or Towns out for Ed Davis or Hollis Jefferson. You can kind of, I think you can slot those defensive-minded guys in where the game dictates, rather than kind of starting with a Okoji, who I'm a big fan of, and you know, everyone who listens to this podcast knows I'm a big Josh Okoji guy. But I think on the odd night where those five offensive-minded starters are holding on and holding their own defensively, like you might just win that game in the opening 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think for me, the way that I approach it and the way that I think about it is that, you know, I really think that the Wolves need to play with a little bit more continuity. Right. And I know last year was just a complete rotating door of different guys that were in and on the floor. And the Wolves also just had about a million different lineup combinations that played together last year. And yeah. So I think that being able to start Okoji and have Edwards come off the bench, at least initially, can allow for the bench to have a little bit more offensive firepower. I think if you go with that really fun five, which I mean, I really want to see that five play a lot of minutes together, in Russell, Beasley, Edwards, Hernan Gomez, and Towns, or Lehman and Towns, whichever one. You know, I want to see that lineup play a lot of minutes together, but at the same time, then, you know, that really leaves you with, you know, your bench lineup is really Rubio, Okoji, Culver, and then either Lehman or Wancho, and then either Ed Davis or Naz Reid, depending on, you know, how the backup five position is going to roll out. And there's just not a lot of offense there. And I think that being able to space it out a little bit and kind of overlap the lineups, you know, by 2 and 3 minutes, just to get, you know, guys like Beasley or Edwards, or hell, even D'Angelo Russell, you know, minutes with that bench group, I think that the team's just going to be able to kind of stay in more of a rhythm offensively for extended periods of time, no matter who's out on the floor, whether it's the kind of the starting crew or more guys from the bench unit. And I just think that the Wolves need to be more balanced, rather than just going all in with offense and then trying to go all in on defense with the bench, just because I think that you need to have guys that can score the ball out on the floor at all times. And I think the Wolves are, you know, uniquely deep kind of on the wing, in the sense yeah. that, or at least in recent Timberwolves history, you know, I think that, and they'd be wise to kind of at least space that out, at least for the first three quarters of the game. And then once you get kind of into the closing lineup, I think then you kind of start to have a different conversation.
Yeah, well, that's my thing with this, is if you're going to run that all-out offensive lineup, like you just suggested, you need – Ryan Saunders is going to have a lot of responsibility and pressure on him to really get the rotations right, because you can't have hockey subs, you know, with five offensive guys and five, you know, more defensive-minded guys and guys who can't really create their own shot. Like, you know, the bench would be, in this scenario, I guess – you know, Rubio, Okoji, Culver, Hernan Gomez, and you know, Davis or Reid. Like, you don't want that five in there very often. So I think if you're going to start with that offense heavy lineup, you need to probably hook Beasley early, or you need to hook Edwards early. Right. Like you said, even Russell, and get Rubio on, and then you need to bring them guys back in and kind of just mix it in with the bench lineup. You need to be able to sprinkle those offensive talents in at all times. You need at least, I think, one or two on the court, like one or two of Russell, Beasley, Edwards, Towns. I think they all always need to be on the court. So yeah, if my, you know, wish, I guess, came true, it would be a lot of responsibility on Saunders to really get the rotations right and be able to take guys off and put other guys back on when it calls for it, because you don't want to end up with that the bench line up on for 5 to 8 minute stretches, because that's the game gone right there.
Yeah, no, and I think that makes a lot of sense. I think kind of the biggest theme from, you know, from what we've just been saying is that, you know, there needs to be a lot of overlap, and there can't be a very distinguished, this is the starting five and this is the bench five. I think it kind of needs to be, you know, either three or four different pools of people where it's like, all right, these are the guys that are playing pretty much solely with starters. Maybe that's like Towns and Russell, maybe, or Towns and Beasley. And then you have kind of the guys who are pretty much only playing with bench guys, and that's like the Ed Davis or the Jarrett Culver, or like, who knows? Maybe it's Lehman, or maybe it's, you know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson if he ends up getting a roster spot. But I think that's kind of the way that they're going to approach it. And in the preseason, I think we're going to see a ton of different lineups because, you know, I think that last year we saw a lot of small sample sizes with interesting things. And I think it's going to be really interesting to kind of get a more enhanced, you know, solid sample of some of these different lineups that we've seen. And some of the first ones that come to my mind are, okay, what does Jarrett Culver look like with Karl Anthony Towns? Yeah. Because those two played well together. And Culver was much, much better when Towns was on the floor. Especially, and two, when Josh Kogi was on the floor, they were very, very good. And then the other one is D'Angelo Russell playing with another guard in the backcourt. D'Angelo Russell was tremendous with Jordan McLaughlin last year. And I hope J-Mac's back. You know, I think it's kind of fishy that he hasn't signed a two-way or, you know, been signed to that 15 or signed at least to a training camp deal yet. But yeah, those are some things that I'll be watching for.
Yeah, and like you said, I think this team needs continuity. I think it desperately needs it, but I also won't be surprised if Ryan Saunders trots out three different starting lineups for the preseason games. I think they've got Memphis twice and Dallas in the last game, if I'm correct.
Yep, I think they go to Dallas for the last
game. Yeah, so you know they're both pretty good Western Conference teams, kind of decent litmus test. I know that it's obviously preseason, but I think you'll see some teams, especially like Memphis, who didn't play playoffs, I think you'll see them play their starters a bit more heavily than you would in a normal preseason, just because they obviously haven't played for a while. They need to ramp back up pretty quickly. But yeah, I won't be surprised if Saunders is really tinkering around with things in the preseason. I'm really excited to see what that first lineup is. And I think that'll probably answer some of our questions, because that'll obviously be the one that's in the front of his mind, the first starting lineup. But yeah, I won't be surprised if you, even though three games, you might see Rubio start a game and Beasley come off the bench, or definitely I think Edwards and Okogie might flip-flop between starters and bench role just in those games, and just kind of see what works a little bit. It's obviously not going to be the perfect indication, and you can never know what's going to happen as you head into the regular season, but I think the preseason is going to be really important for that starting lineup and just to play around with it a little bit. But yeah, what do you think, now that we've kind of pivoted from the starting lineup, I think the more important thing is the closing lineup, and the rotation in general is more important. But who do you see closing games? You know, I think there'll be a lot of games with Minnesota where it's quite close, because they can always hang in there offensively, I think. So I think we will see a lot of close games this year. Who's that finishing that closing lineup in those close games for you?
Yeah, so despite him not starting, I think it would be pretty ridiculous if Ricky Rubio wasn't out there closing the end of games. You know, I think, you know, on Thursday, D'Angelo Russell was talking about how, you know, how Ricky Rubio just makes the game so much easier for other guys he's around. He referenced Donovan Mitchell, he referenced Devin Booker, and he also referenced Anthony Edwards, and that, you know, For young players, you know, towards the end of games, they can just make the game so much more difficult for themselves. And having a guy like Rubio out there, who's a very steady hand, really experienced veteran player, to just kind of calm all the tensions and just kind of, you know, give off this even keeled demeanor for the whole entire, you know, lineup that's out there, I think is going to be great. So he'll start, I think he'll be at the one in the closing lineup. Ricky Rubio will be, and then he'll be flanked by Russell and Beasley, I think, on the wing. And then, I really think Josh Okogie is going to close at the four. I think that they're obviously going to need another really strong perimeter defender. or really just kind of versatile defender that can either roam, kind of play that Draymond Green kind of free safety role, or, you know, or just kind of go getting somebody's jock on the perimeter, and be able to switch with someone like Malik Beasley. And then, you know, obviously just be able to kind of provide some supplemental defensive help on the back line for someone like Cat, I think, is going to be big and something that I think that closing lineup would need.
Yeah. So do you think that Beasley or Edwards, you know, like, do you think Beasley or Edwards get the nod in that closing lineup, or do you think that a Cody comes in for both of those and you kind of play, you know, an Gomez or Lehman or one of those guys? Like, do you think a Cody is the four in that closing lineup, or
I would have a Kogi at the four.
And do you play him with Edwards and Beasley, or obviously not, you know, do you play Beasley or Edwards is the question, I guess, at the three in that scenario?
Yeah, I think right away they're definitely not going to close with Edwards. I think they very well could in the preseason, just to try and get him some exposure to kind of how the end of games work with, you know, a much quicker game in the NBA.
But I think the things that you worry about with Edwards don't really line up immediately to clutch time minutes. Like, you don't want him taking bad shots in the clutch. You don't want him letting someone blow by them, like, especially as a rookie who can get
falling
down
asleep off ball. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, guys like Beasley and Russell who have those same issues too, that they're veterans, or, you know, kind of veterans in the league now. And, they can deal with that a little bit better and deal with the criticism that comes with that, rather than Edwards, who probably, gets blasted in the media or gets, you know, a bad reputation for being a bad defender if you kind of throw him into the fire straight away and he just burns up.
Yeah, and I think that they're going to do everything they can to protect him early on, solely because, you know, you don't want to kill a kid's confidence. It seems as though he's coming into this season extremely confident in his abilities and that he has a really strong desire to kind of not necessarily prove people wrong, but prove that he's legit, if that makes sense. And I think that, you know, he's going to have to watch at the end of games, unless he's just lighting it up and he's been on fire. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if, like, Beasley's playing poorly and Edwards has been awesome if they leave Edwards in or something like that. But I think that the fact that Rubio, Russell, Okogie, and Towns, I think those four, I am kind of all in and rock solid on those guys closing. Just because at the end of game, when the game slows down, like, yeah, you need offense. But at the same time, like, you have Russell and Towns, and that's going to almost get you a guaranteed good look with those two running a pick and roll, and then having someone like, you know,
well, you have Rubio, if you have Rubio in there as well. Like, Rubio is a supreme passer and a guy who can get Cat a pick and roll, you know, bucket better than pretty much anyone in the league. Like, if you can survive for 5 to 10 minutes off a steady dose of pick and rolls with Cat and Russell or Rubio and Cat, and isolations with Russell as well, and isolations with Cat. Like, you're completely right about that. That in those closing lineups and throughout the game, like, Cat and Russell can get you buckets even if the floor's not spaced, you know, to the premium level, or the five out system's not working as well as maybe it can. Them guys can always get you a bucket, and it might not be the best way to run a full game, obviously. Like, you want shooters around those guys, and you want the system in place where you can run that five out system. But at the end of the game, I think you can have a Cody on. You can have Rondae Hollis Jefferson on. Like, I think you can survive with those when you really need a stop, and that's the end of the game.
Yeah, and I think it's really just gonna. I think it's really just gonna depend too on what other guys are out there. Like, for instance, like in the one game that we saw with Cat and D'Lo in Toronto. Like, Toronto just ran 1-4 pick and roll and just destroyed D'Angelo Russell in the fourth quarter of that game. Like, if Towns,
when you have a guy like Siakam who can run the pick and roll from the four as a ball handler, like, and you can invert the pick and roll and run 4-1 pick and roll or 1-4 and really isolate D'Lo, like, that's when you need the defense there.
And I think you could do the same thing with Towns and Russell. I think you could do a 1-5 pick and roll or have a Kogi as the roll man. And I'll get into that a little bit later with another lineup that I have. But my main point is that I don't think you need more offense at the end of games. I think you need, like, I, let me say this. Like, if you have Rubio, Russell, and Towns out there, I think that for sure one of those other guys needs to be a defensive-minded player.
Yeah.
Because with Rubio, Russell, and Towns, those three on their own are enough to get you a good shot almost every time down the floor if you're really slowing the game down and playing half-court offense. And that then your fourth player is probably used as a guy who can spot up as well. So that's probably either Beasley or Edwards. And then obviously that leaves your defensive guy with Kogi. So what do you have for a closing lineup?
I'm completely with you. I think Russell and Rubio need to start. Like, Rubio is clearly in the top five players on this team. You know, probably, in my opinion, he's the third best player on the team. And I think I probably have Beasley out there just as another shooter. And then I have a Kogi at the four and Towns at the five. I think that you can survive against most teams with a Kogi at the four. I don't think teams are going to go out of their way to post him up. And I think that he's strong enough and long enough to guard most fours. Obviously, if you're playing a really big team, then you might have to switch that up and bring a Kogi down, take Beasley off and play, you know, an Ed Gomez or Hollis Jefferson or maybe even Ed Davis. But I completely agree on all fronts with what you were saying, is that at the end of the game, you need the defense. All game, you have the chance to blow a team away with the offense. And if that hasn't worked and it's still, you know, a really close game and you still need to grind out 2 or 3 minutes to finish the game, I think that you need that defender in there. And at times, I think that you'll even need two defenders, and I'll get into that in a second, but I think that there'll be times where maybe a Kogi and Hollis Jefferson play, or a Kogi and Culver play at the end of a game, just because, like we said, you can scrape by offensively pretty well with Russell, Rubio, and Towns. So, yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you.
Awesome.
So Jimmy's now that we've got them out of the way, they're the two lineups for both of us that I think will probably feature the most. But Jimmy, a weird one. Let's get a bit funky with it. What's another lineup that you see getting minutes this season and you think will be fun?
So I'm going to start with my playmaking all over the place lineup is what I called it. This lineup has Rubio at the one, Russell at the two, a Kogi at the three, Jared Vanderbilt at the four, and Cat at the five.
I love it.
And so someone might look at this and say, okay, that's not enough shooting. What's going on? Rubio has shot 37% on threes over his last 3 years on a hell of more than 600 attempts. And then we all obviously know how good a shooters Russell and Towns are. So you've got three very competent shooters out there. And then one that I think is really interesting is doing like a 4-3 pick and roll with Jared Vanderbilt handling the ball and Josh Okogie coming up as a roll man. I think would be really, really interesting just because if we can get Jared Vanderbilt going downhill to the rim, he's a very capable playmaker off the dribble. And did that a decent amount in Iowa this past season. And I'm sure that he would love to kick it out to D'Angelo Russell or Karl Anthony Towns in the wing. And even if he kicks it out to Ricky Rubio, you know, Ricky Rubio is an incredibly smart player in terms of knowing when to attack a closeout to playmake, attack a closeout to score, or just shoot an open shot. And I think being able to kind of unlock a little bit of Jared Vanderbilt's abilities would be really cool. Or even if you wanted to use, you know, Rubio and Vanderbilt or Russell and Vanderbilt in a pick and roll. Hell, you could use Vanderbilt and Cat. I mean, you could just run a pick and roll with pretty much any combination of those guys, five guys on the floor, and really put a lot of pressure on the defense. And I think just being able to throw a ton of different looks at defenses on a nightly basis is going to be really important and is something that I think the Timberwolves are positioned to do. And I'm just really excited to see how creative Gerson Rosas lets Ryan Saunders be with the lineups and the different ways that he wants to play. Because I think, you know, Ryan got dealt a pretty shitty hand last year in terms of the guys that he had to work with.
Yeah, for sure.
And this year he's got a bunch of different moves that he can make with the cards that he's got in his hand. And you know, I'm just excited to kind of see him, you know, get creative and come up with, you know, some unique lineups that are going to be fun. And so that was probably my most unique one in terms of kind of it being a little out there and more outside the box. But
yeah, and that's fascinating to me. Like, just as you were saying that, I was kind of, you know, I think you articulated it really well. And I think I was kind of just envisioning that Culver and that Vanderbilt Culver, Vanderbilt Okogie pick and roll. And I think the first thing that I thought is it immediately takes away the issue that Okogie can't shoot, and it uses him getting him downhill towards the rim before you even, you know, mention the fact that Vanderbilt is a really good passer for a big man. And I was just envisioning the Towns in the corner, or Towns kind of coming off a back cut and getting the little dump off pass in the dunker spot. I have said this before, and I'm a strong advocate of getting Towns, using Towns like a shooter, like not just a big man shooter, not just as a pick and pop guy, just as a, you know, JJ Redick. Like, I want to see Towns running off screens. Obviously he's not as fast and as agile as Redick and Duncan Robinson and guys like that, but I want to see Towns running off multiple picks. And one way to do that is obviously, you know, you get D'Angelo Russell in and he can take the ball out of Towns' hands. But another way is just to get funky with it, like you said. Like, get Vanderbilt handling the ball. Obviously not for... like, obviously he's not going to bring the ball up the court and run offense every play. But as on a second side pick and roll, you know, with Okogie as a screener, you've kind of junked up the game, like you always like to say. And you've turned the defense into a little bit of scramble mode. All of a sudden, you know, Brook Lopez is chasing Karl Anthony Towns off two pin downs, and Jared Vanderbilt's hitting him off a driving kick. That's fun, man.
Yeah, and the other one that I think too is like the Timberwolves are in elevator doors a decent amount for Kat, where Kat would set kind of a decoy screen or a pin down for somebody, and then kind of hide behind elevator doors. And then, you know, we'd open it up and close it. And I think if you used Okogie and Vanderbilt as the elevator doors, you know, with Rubio handling the ball or Russell handling the ball or something like that, you know, if the defense just cheats and, you know, tries to fly up and switch on to Cat and get either through the doors or around the doors, I mean, the roll down to the rim is going to be there all day long. And so Okogie and Vanderbilt are two guys that, obviously are really, really good, good rolling to the rim and finishing around the rim, either off of cuts or off of rolls and stuff like that. So I'm excited to see those two, just kind of see how they're used considering the different things that they showed last year and just kind of how they've developed in the last probably, I don't know, 18 months or so.
Yeah, so the one that I had was, I kind of mentioned it briefly just a minute ago, and it's similar to our closing lineup, so it's not quite as out there. I do have one more after this, but it's the defense is the best offense kind of lineup, and it's Rubio at the one, Russell at the two, and then Okogie at three, Hollis Jefferson at the four, and Karl Anthony Towns at the five. I think that it's obviously not going to be the starters. I don't even think that Hollis Jefferson, you know, who's on a non-guaranteed training camp deal, will probably be closing too many games. But it's a five-man unit that I think will certainly see minutes at times. I think like we just panned out, like Rubio, Russell, and Towns, with them on the floor, you maintain offensive flexibility and efficiency no matter what. And then on the other end, you actually have a chance to get some stops regularly. Like Rubio at the point of attack with RHJ cleaning up for Towns' mistakes on the backside, or you know, Hollis Jefferson and Okogie hounding ball handling wings. If you manage to create an offense in that five that can score enough, then I think you can just turn Okogie and Hollis Jefferson loose on defense and hold on to a lead that you've built earlier through that offensive-minded lineup that I spoke about, or even peg back a lead that the opposition has gained because you couldn't defend earlier in the game. And I think off that lineup, you can kind of pivot, you know, any way you want. You can take out Russell and put in Edwards, and then all of a sudden, you know, maybe you're just going with letting Edwards cook with Towns, and letting Rubio kind of set the table for those two. I think even that's probably a bit more funky, is take Russell out of that lineup and put Anthony Edwards in at the two and run him with Okogie, Hollis, Jefferson, Towns, and Rubio. I just think that with Towns on the floor, next to Hollis Jefferson, you can cover a lot of his mistakes. If you can't tell, I'm really high on the Hollis Jefferson signing, and I think there's no way they should let him walk out of camp without a deal. And I think if you can, you know, pump that lineup out for 5-10 minutes, give some starters a rest, then you have a chance to not just let a lead slip away and maybe even build on that lead.
Yeah, no, I think that Hollis Jefferson is an interesting one. But my thing is I'm just not entirely sure, like, is Hollis Jefferson, do you really think the Wolves would play Hollis Jefferson over
Davis?
Layman. Like over a Jake Layman or over a Wancho? Like, I'm not quite sure that they would be willing to do that, considering that Jake Layman was really, really good when he was in last year. And that obviously they just committed, you know, a 3-year deal to Wancho. So, my thing is, if he's going to play, I think that it would probably be in one of a funkier lineup.
Yeah. And you're probably right. I think that he's definitely down the pecking order right now. I don't think there's any way, even with a strong training camp from Hollis Jefferson, that he's going to come in and take the spot of Layman, or certainly not Hernan Gomez on the depth chart, you know. So I think it's more of a pipe dream for me to have him playing with a starter-ish kind of lineup. But I also think that, like he was a great defender on a very, very good defensive team last season. And, like, I've got the numbers in front of me. I kind of put them on Twitter yesterday. But, like, the positions that he defended, the source is Basketball Index. This is from there. So he spent 18.4% of his time guarding point guards, 23.6% of his time guarding shooting guards, 19.4% guarding small forwards, 21% guarding power forwards, and 17.6% guarding centers. And for a team like Minnesota that has such publicized, well-publicized issues defensively, I just think a guy who literally pretty much split his minutes between all five positions, that's just so valuable. And I think if you can get him out there in a lineup that also has Okogie, who we've already spoke about, we think he can guard at least 1 through 4. Like, that's some crazy versatility you've got defensively. And like you said, I completely agree. I don't think that it is a lineup that you'll see with Russell and Towns on the floor together. But if Hollis Jefferson's out there with Okogie, in my mind, I think you actually have a chance to win minutes defensively, rather than just survive enough and let your offense win.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, I would rather play Hollis Jefferson over Wancho. I'm not saying it from my personal opinion of, like, I don't think he's going to play. I think it's more of, like, trying to think of, like, what I think the team is going to do rather than what I'd want the team to do. Like, I think he would be awesome as, like, maybe not necessarily the starting four, but as, like, the first four off the bench. But again, it just comes down to, you know, is that going to happen? So,
yeah, I think for him to start to get minutes consistently, it's going to require, you know, an injury or something like that, where he is forced to play 20 minutes a night all of a sudden, instead of, you know, maybe one game, you know, did not play, coach's decision, and then the next game he might get 3 or 4 minutes. Like, if something happens, a COVID case or whatever it is, and Hollis Jefferson all of a sudden needs to play 20-25 minutes, then I think after that, maybe he might be the kind of guy who sticks in the lineup. A bit like J-Mac last year, how, you know, he only came back into the lineup because they had no other options, and by the end of the season, he was a must-have in that lineup, kind of. So Yeah, I completely agree. I think that Lehman and Wancho, it's their spot to lose as the starting four and the backup four. But I think Hollis Jefferson will make a case for himself at some point during the season.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so, because he's a guy that's been on some pretty damn good teams and had some interesting roles on some pretty damn good teams in Toronto. So, you know, and I think the 15th roster spot probably comes down to, you know, is J-Mac willing to accept a qualifying is J-Mac willing to play on another two-way? And I think, you know, two-ways got expanded to like 60 games or something like that for this upcoming season. So you wouldn't have to worry too much about not having J-Mac, but, or not having J-Mac for like the full 72 game schedule. But, yeah, I think it'll just be interesting to see, you know, how much is going to change really once they get into camp. Like, if Jalen Noel just shoots the hell out of the ball, like, does that mean that he's going to stay and that they're just going to not roll with McLaughlin in a third point guard? Or so it's just, I'm just interested to see the, kind of those types of things and see what happens. But I think that the fact that that Hollis Jefferson was willing to come to Minnesota for a training camp deal when he probably could have gotten a training camp deal from another team, I think is interesting as it relates to what he may see in Minnesota.
Yeah, and I think that means they've probably given him some sort of indication that a spot, in the rotation is there if he can go out and grab it. And that's maybe a bit different to what we've got in our minds, that he's kind of on the outside looking in, like maybe that spot's wide open and they're going to really make Wancho earn that starting spot. Like, I think without a doubt Wancho's going to play minutes and, you know, 20 plus at least, but maybe they're going to, you know, really make Wancho, Lehman, Vanderbilt, you know, Hollis Jefferson really pit them against each other in training camp and see who comes out victorious.
Yep, for sure.
So do you have one more lineup for me?
Yeah, so the other lineup that I kind of thought would be a lot of fun was just the Josh Okogie chaos lineup, which is putting Russell at the one, Beasley at the two, Edwards at the three, Okogie at the four, and Towns at the five. So you just have a bunch of dudes who are either athletic as hell, can shoot it, or obviously are just really, really good scorers. So I think that's just a five-out lineup that would be, you know, loads of fun, that I think would really just energize the whole entire team and kind of get everybody going, and would one that I think would be a lot of fun if, you know, the Wolves needed to turn to a spark and just kind of get something going that hasn't been there. You know, if they turn to it like towards the end of the first quarter, that ends up being kind of the first lineup that they roll with, bringing a guy off the bench or something like that. I just think it's one that, you know, you can do just about anything with that lineup, both on offense and on defense. I think that, you know, hopefully Edwards would be able to switch with Okogie if you need him to. And then, you know, hopefully Beasley, even if he's not there on defense, if he's just willing to compete and work really hard, and, you know, I think he is. I think from what I saw of Beasley last year, like, I haven't gone back and watched all 14 games from like a defensive lens, but, you know, he competed and he wants to be here and he wants to work his ass off and play his ass off on the floor. So I think that would be one that would just be so much fun to watch.
Yeah. And I think in small doses, we're going to see lineups that let Edwards and Beasley be that guy for a minute or two. Like,
I completely agree.
And I think especially with Edwards, like, I don't think you draft him one to completely, you know, put him in a room and lock the door. Obviously, we both agree they're not going to just completely let him loose and let him play 35 minutes a game and give him the Andrew Wiggins rookie year treatment, which the team's should be too good for that. Not that I think they're going to be good, but I think there's too many options to just give free rein to Edwards. But I think you're definitely going to see 2-3 minute periods where Edwards is the best scorer on the floor, and he's getting high pick and rolls. He's, you know, pulling up for three. He's using that shot creation that he showed so much at Georgia, and showing him that yeah, this is what you're going to be in the future if you play your cards right. And like you said, I think he can switch with Okogie. I'm a lot less worried about his on-ball defense. I think as I've gone back and watched a few more Georgia games again, his on-ball defense is pretty good. I mean, he reaches too much and sometimes he kind of just expected help on the Georgia team, like when he kind of shaded a guy to somewhere and there was no help there, and that did make him look worse. And that wasn't always his fault, and sometimes it was, but it wasn't always. But in general, I think when he gets down in a stance and really goes hard at it, he's a really good on-ball defender, and I think a pretty good switcher as well. Like, he's pretty aware for when to switch and how to make a pretty seamless switch. Off the ball, just when he's kind of just standing there and needs to keep his eyes on a cutter or on a guy who's going to come up and set a screen, that's when he tends to fall asleep. But I think in general, if you put a good defender next to him, like Okogie, and ask them to be guys who switch pretty regularly, I think that you can survive that. And yeah, I'm higher on Edwards than I was pre-draft. Now, maybe that's just because we drafted him and I'm trying to look for the positives in life. But yeah, I think that Edwards can survive, and I think there'll be times where Edwards and Beasley get to cook as first or second options, and I think that lineup that you said is maybe one of them. Yeah. So we'll jump straight into my one. This one is similar to yours, how not as good, but I'm not even sure if this works at all, but I love it because it's just extremely chaotic. And that is Rubio at the one, Edwards at the two, Culver at the three, Lehman at the four, and Ed Davis at the five. It's very much a bench unit. It's kind of the hockey subs like we described before, that you don't want this team in there for 10 minutes at a time. But if you can scrape 2 or 3 minutes out of them when Towns is in foul trouble or when Russell's not there defensively at all, that's where I see this lineup coming in. I think it's the only one that I've mentioned really that features the Rubio and Edwards pairing exclusively without Towns and Russell there as well. And obviously the Rubio Edwards pairing has been discussed a lot in terms of mentorship and in terms of the way Rubio brought along Mitchell and Devin Booker. And I think he can do that same kind of thing for Culver as well, provided that Culver, Lehman, and Ed Davis can all dive to the rim consistently as a cutter or as a roller in pick and roll. Then I think it's a lineup that can work, you know, can scrape by offensively, especially with Rubio being elite at feeding cutters and feeding rollers. And then it allows Edwards to do his thing, like we just said. Like, at his heart, he's an isolation scorer and a difficult shot maker. And it's kind of, the spacing might hurt him a little bit with that lineup, but it's kind of like the Georgia vibe. It gives me the college vibe that he just played with the added bonuses of, I guess, NBA caliber finishes at the rim and a passing savant next to him. And then defensively, I think it's pretty strong. Like, I think with Culver, Lehman, Ed Davis, and Rubio out there, I think you can definitely survive defensively for 3 or 4 minutes and kind of just run athletically. Like, just get Rubio out in the break, get Ed Davis pulling down every rebound in sight, and then Rubio outlet passes to Edwards, Culver, and Lehman. And I don't know. Yeah,
I like that five a lot.
Yeah.
I like the idea of that.
I'm not sure how much it works, but I think it's fun. I think it's excitingly chaotic, like I said. Like, the main thing is that last point I just mentioned where Ed Davis is an elite rebounder. He always has been. He's never been a guy who's played big enough minutes to grab 13, 14 boards a night. But, you know, he was grabbing 8, 9 boards in 23, 24 minutes a game, you know, within the last few years. So if you get him pulling down defensive rebounds and then quickly getting it out to Rubio and just letting Edwards, Culver, and Lehman run loose in transition, I think he can have some fun with that lineup.
Yeah, no, I think I like that a lot. I like especially, you know, the idea of kind of having two really smart veteran guys and Rubio and Davis out on the floor, and just to make sure that the team is organized on both ends at all times, I think would be really cool. I think that would also be, you know, you say that it would be really good for for Edwards, you know, I think that would almost be the best case scenario for Jarrett Culver.
Yeah. Who needs just, he needs a best case scenario, because right now he finds himself on the outside looking in a lot of these lineups. Like, he doesn't just slot into it like everyone else does. So he needs a lineup like that, I think, to optimize him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the opportunities would be there for him to cut a ton. But also, you know, with Rubio and Edwards, I think, and with Lehman, there's enough spacing in that where, you know, he could probably get some open looks from deep. And, you know, hopefully his shooting kind of continues on the upward trend that it finished at last, you know, kind of after the trade deadline last season. But we'll see what happens. I think Culver's kind of the one guy, I think, that we just like have no idea what's going to happen in terms of who he's going to play with, how it's going to look and all that. So, but I'm excited to see kind of how they feel they should best deploy him.
Yeah. So we've got a bit of time left. So let's get into that a little bit. Like, how do you see Culver's, I guess, minute load at the moment? Like, what does he need to do for you to become a guy who really cements himself in a guard wing rotation that right now is packed with depth, like you said earlier, especially compared to Timberwolves teams of the past? Like, do you see him really on the outside looking in, Culver, or do you see him getting minutes because he was the sixth pick last year? Like, where do you see him?
Yeah, so, you know, I've kind of, you know, been wanting the Timberwolves to trade Jarrett Culver for a while. Just because I think it's pretty clear that he does not fit the way the Timberwolves want to play. And I think the fact that, you know, he struggled so much with just his overall confidence last year, I think was just tough. And if he was in and out of the rotation for arguably the worst team in the NBA last year, I don't know why he deserves to be, you know, a constant in a rotation for what should be seemingly a much better team this year. I think Gerst probably is unwilling to admit that he made a mistake with Culver last year and is probably going to want to keep Culver around, and want him in the rotation. But, you know, it really is all just going to depend on, you know, who he plays with. Like, if he's going to be able to play with a playmaker that's going to be able to hit him when he cuts, or, you know, other shooters so that he'll be able to have open shots in a spaced out floor or that. So I think they'll probably find, you know, 12 to 15 minutes early on for him, in that type of context. But I don't think I would be willing to give him more than that right now, unless, you know, there's some drastic change that he's had since the season ended.
Yeah, I think the point you made just there that he was one of the worst players on one of the worst teams in the league, I think that's a great point, that he shouldn't be handed minutes just because he was a high pick last year. And I think I agree that he will get minutes, and I think that he still has a chance to be a definitely a rotation player, if not, you know, a kind of good player. But like you said, you can't just give him minutes because of a reputation at Texas Tech 2 years ago. Like, not with the depth this team has now, not with the guys who have proven it in the league. And Edwards has the fresh reputation as a number one pick and a guy who I think most people would agree has just more raw talent and more of an NBA ready game than Culver. But like you said, I think the other side of that is do you give up on him straight away? If you can trade him, I think that's probably the option, because then you can get something back for him. You know, he goes to another home. Maybe this all works out well for both sides. But if you can't trade him, which at the moment it looks like they can't, there's been rumors all off season that they've kind of been putting the feelers out for deals with him. But I think if you can't trade him, then can you give up on him and play him 0 minutes? It's hard, because that's the other side of the fence from what I said before. Like, he hasn't really earned those minutes, but how will he ever develop into the guy you picked a lot, you know, only 12 months ago? how will ever kind of develop into that guy if he plays no minutes. Maybe he just needs an extended spell in the G League. Like maybe Tola starts in the G League and
I would like that.
And yeah, I think that last year he probably definitely would have benefited from G League minutes, but this team was just so depleted and just lacked depth in general to play their first round pick in the G League. But I think maybe you get him down there with Jaden McDaniels and with, I think, Naz Reid as well. Like, I think Naz Reid will drop out of the rotation most likely as well. So maybe you get him down there playing with guys who are NBA caliber players in the future, and maybe even Vanderbilt as well. Get them down, get some minutes together, and maybe he regains some of that confidence, because that's the thing with him is the confidence and the struggles to get himself going when he's had a bad start to the game or when a few things go wrong. But I just Culver's the most confusing aspect of this team for me. I don't know where to go with him. I don't know what they're going to do with him. And I think, like, pivoting back to the preseason, he might be the most interesting storyline for the preseason for me. Like, if he gets 20 minutes in the first night when all the starters play pretty decent minutes as well, then maybe we were wrong and we have to change our tune. But yeah, I'm not sure where to go with Culver.
Yeah, I think the one last note that I wanted to touch on with Culver is, like, are you willing to give minutes to Culver that comes away from Beasley, Edwards, or Kogi?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That's, I would rather have all three of those guys on the floor before I'd have Culver on the floor.
And you can,
frankly,
pump
I'd out, rather have Lehman on the floor than Culver too.
Exactly. And you can pump out, 48 minutes at the shooting guard and 48 minutes at the small forward position pretty comfortably without mentioning Culver's name.
Yeah. And the other thing too that I want to mention about the G League is, like, I think for his development it would be good for him to go to the G League, but I think if you go to the G League, like, it totally sinks his value.
Yeah. Oh,
because
yeah.
It's saying if Timberwolves view him as a G League player, then why should we even think about giving anything up for him? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And if confidence issues are the problem with him, like, I don't know if sending him out of the league to the lower leagues is something that's going to help with that. And I'm not sure if he has ever kind of experienced, like, that sort of adversity, especially since he's, came through the ranks. He wasn't a highly touted prospect, but since he started to blossom at Texas Tech, like, it's a pretty big punch in the guts to be drafted sixth overall and then a year later not even be able to play a single minute on a team that likely won't make the playoffs. So it's a slippery slope, I think, with him. And like we've said, I think trading him is the best option. And that's not saying that I don't like Jarrett Culver. I don't think that he can be a good player. But it's just the path for him to become a good player in the next, year, 2 years, 3 years on this team is filled with obstacles now.
Right.
And
I completely agree.
Yeah, like, last year was the year where it wasn't filled with obstacles. Like, last year was the year where it was open road and it was sunny and, it was easy traveling and he managed to, get stuck in a pothole. So, I don't know where to go with him. But is there anything else you kind of want to get to before we wrap this up? It's a bit, we're going a bit shorter than usual, but I think it's been a good one.
Yeah, no, I mean, the main thing that I wanted to kind of hit too before we get to this is, like, in terms of stuff that we're looking for in the preseason games, what are kind of some storylines that you think are going to be important to follow?
Yeah.
Or things for fans to watch while they're watching the games.
Yeah. Well, I think kind of the ones that we've touched on a little bit for me is, like, obviously Culver we just spoke about. I think the Ed Davis, Naz Reid battle is one that I'll be watching. Just these are just in terms of, I guess, minute distribution and how the rotation's going to shake out. One I mentioned earlier is how they use Towns, whether they we obviously haven't seen Towns and Russell play together much. I don't think they're going to use Towns as the playmaker from the top of the key as much anymore, like they did when the Timberwolves had no other playmakers. So I'm interested to see how the Towns-Russell dynamic works in terms of, like, where Towns gets the ball, where Towns starts possessions with the ball. Like, is he going to be more of a pick and roll kind of player now, a pick and pop guy, or is he still going to get the bulk of his possessions, I guess, at the top of the tee and allow him to work from there? And then the Rubio Russell thing, which is, you know, played out by now, but still very interesting. I think that how much will they play together? What will it look like when they play together? Like, will they kind of be taking turns as the ball handler and one guy off the ball as a spot up shooter? Will they try and turn Russell pretty much into a shooting guard when he's playing with Rubio and just have Rubio running the show and Russell as an off ball maestro? That's kind of the main things that stick out to me. What about you?
Yeah, I think for me the front court rotation is going to be really interesting. Not necessarily just Naz Reid and Ed Davis, like you were saying, which I also completely agree with, because, you know, it was clear that they wanted to give Naz some more run towards the end of last year.
And they like Naz.
With Kat, yeah. Like, and even really with Kat being there. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. And so I think his role and how he's used, I think, is going to be really interesting. Like, do they value his shooting enough to play him with Ed Davis? Like, or is he just going to be relegated again to the G League? Just because, I mean, there's not a whole lot of teams that can play or that keep three centers on their roster and play all three of them. So I think that's going to be interesting. And then, too, I'm kind of interested to see, you know, what Jake Layman's role is going to be. Because Jake Layman was hurt for most of last year with that turf toe injury that's just really tough to get rid of. But when he played with Kat, I mean, he is phenomenal. When you go back to his time in Portland, you know, he was consistently above the 85th, 90th percentile in cutting, and is really smart guy. Has great spatial awareness, understands, you know, kind of where to be on the floor and when to cut and when to stay spaced out in the corners or on the wings. And so having him play with two really, really good playmakers in either Rubio or Russell, and then also a good post playmaker in Towns, I think that Layman is really going to help Kat, not necessarily right away as a shooter, or chiefly as a shooter, just because, you know, I think he can shoot it, but I don't think that's the best part of his game. Where I think he's going to help Kat the most is cutting, because the Timberwolves just didn't really have a whole lot of guys that were really willing to cut off of Towns last year, other than Josh Okogie and Jake Layman.
Yeah.
Or guys that did it just weren't very confident, like Jarrett Culver. So I think kind of how Layman plays in his role is going to be really interesting. And I think that'll kind of in turn tell us a lot more about the front court rotation and how that's going to be, because who knows? You know, maybe we could kind of see more of a positionless basketball from the Wolves when you use a guy like Jake Layman more, because he's a guy who is really smart on defense, both off ball and on the ball, is good on the help side and is, you know, can play different positions, whether it be the three or the four on offense. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see kind of the way they use some of those in-between guys and kind of what that'll tell us about kind of where they see each player at a given, like what they think a certain player's position is, I think will be interesting. And just kind of seeing if that evolves at all over the year, based on kind of, how it goes early on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. And I think there's one more thing that just came to me then, which I think is a thing that we all think and one that we've thought for a while, is I'm excited to see, or intrigued to see, what if Josh Okogie and to a lesser extent Jarrett Culver can shoot any better at all? Like, I think that at some point
it's hard to be worse.
yeah. But, you know, at some point that Josh Okogie could end up shooting 33-34% from three, and all of a sudden that raises the ceiling of this team dramatically. And all those lineups that we spoke about, I think Okogie is just a more of a chance to be in them. Especially the starting lineup, if he comes out and can hit 34% from three for the first 2 or 3 weeks, or even if he, you know, goes 6 from 8 throughout the preseason on a kind of hot streak, like maybe that is the sign that Saunders needs to to guarantee him a starting spot. So just the shooting from those two guys, the free throw shooting from Culver, like I'd be interested to see if he came out and hit 70% of his free throws in the preseason or something like that. Like, I think there's just a ton of interesting storylines to see in the preseason, but
right.
Like the whole point of this kind of show has been, I think the rotation and how many minutes guys get, and like you said with Lehman, like what kind of lineup configurations they have him in, like I think that's clearly the most interesting one of all.
Right. And going back to the Okogie versus Culver thing, I mean, it's pretty obvious that Josh has better shooting form than Jarrett does. And in the videos that we've seen from Josh working with Lethal Shooter this summer, I think that his shot form looks even better than it did last year. And it looks just quick and effortless and comfortable more than anything. And I think, he's going to have a more confident shooting stroke. And I think that that's going to translate maybe not to being, you know, an average shooter or just short of that. But I think it's going to at least be a lot better than the 26.6% that he was from three last year. And when you look at some of the guys who around the league who are kind of swing men that focus really at taking shots at the rim and from three. So kind of in this article that I wrote a few weeks back about Josh Okogie, I looked at guys who take 80% of their shots or at least 80% of their shots either at the rim or from three. There's a website called PBPstats.com, which is play-by-play stats. And they have a great tool or a great stat called shot quality. And essentially what it is it's expected effective field goal percentage. And among guys who took at least 80% of their shots at the rim or from three, Josh had the second highest difference between what his expected effective field goal percentage was based on the quality of shots that he took and his actual effective field goal percentage. So there was essentially an 8-point differential, where his expected field goal percentage was right around 56%. And his actual effective field goal percentage was at 48%. And so I think just by some simple regression to the mean there that Josh should shoot the ball better. And I think it's important to acknowledge too with that metric that some of it has to do too with defenses leaving you more open, and that can lead to more open shots. But I think too, just within the flow of the offense, Josh Okogie got a lot of really open looks from three last year.
And he's not like Culver where he seems hesitant to shoot or seems to be down on himself. Like Josh will shoot even when he's missed four for the game. Like he's never
exactly
been shy of getting the next one up. And I think that's important as he grows as a shooter.
Correct. And I think there's no question about the fact that Culver had some form of the yips or lost all confidence in himself. I think that he was really battling himself for a decent amount of last season. Whereas I think Josh has always just been this calm, cool, collected, confident dude when it comes to his own abilities. Like you don't see him like pumping his chest, getting in people's faces, talking about how great he is. But I think he's an extremely confident guy. And I think, you know, with someone like D'Angelo Russell and Ricky Rubio especially, they're going to say, hey, Josh, continue to shoot, because they're going to see in practice that this guy is capable of making some of these shots, and they're going to want him to see it translate on the floor in the game. So those are kind of the biggest reasons why I think Josh is going to shoot it better than Jarrett. But overall, man, I'm just so excited to see this team back out on the floor after 9 months. It's crazy.
I can't believe it's been nine months. Yeah.
If you would have told me in March that we wouldn't see Timberwolves basketball for another 9 months, I don't know what would have happened. But man, I'm just so excited that it's going to be back. And you know, the next time we get on, we'll have some Wolves basketball to talk about. So.
Yeah, can't wait. We'll leave it at that. Thanks a lot, Jack. As usual, it's always a pleasure having a chat with you. And like you said, next time we speak on the podcast, hopefully we've had one or two preseason games and we've got some answers to these questions, and maybe we'll come back and revisit some of this lineup stuff and just get some preseason takeaways in a few weeks.
Yeah, no, that sounds great to me, man. As always, appreciate you having me. It's always a great time. I'm glad you're doing well, and things are starting to ease up down there for you.
Yeah. We're out of lockdown now and haven't had any cases for a while. So, yeah, things are looking pretty good here. Hopefully this vaccine's coming in the States and can get you on the same path that we're on, because, I've always got you guys in my thoughts, and I know things are pretty bad at the moment, but looks like we're the light at the end of the tunnel is finally starting to grow a bit brighter.
Thankfully, man, it's been a battle for sure.
Yeah. So. Well, thanks for coming on, man. I'll catch everyone else next week, and go Wolves.